Right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Vijay Das. He's healthcare policy advocate with Public Citizens Group Congress Watch. Vijay, thank you so much for making the time to come on the program tonight.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Sure. On July 30th, it marked the 50th anniversary of President Johnson's signing of the Medicare program into existence. The program, which is a single-payer health system for America's 55 million senior citizens, is widely popular and has substantially lower administrative costs than private for-profit health insurance. And as this 50th anniversary was commemorated, we had one of the prominent presidential candidates for the Republicans talk about phasing out the program and replacing it with a private for-profit voucher system, something that we'll touch on, Vijay. But I thought initially, Vijay, maybe we could talk about the good things that have resulted from the Medicare program over these 50 years and its financial solvency at the moment.
Sure. I mean, Medicare, as you mentioned, is a single-payer program dedicated to ensuring those over 65 and many disabled groups. And it is seen as a welcome addition to the fabric that is what people see as something untouchable when it comes to scaling back in American politics today. And through hard-fought fights in the past and through lingering ones to preserve it, we are seeing folks in both the presidential as well as congressional politics discuss how we move forward in preserving it. I think it's welcome to note that many of the original advocates saw it as a stepping stone for America phasing out its for-profit model and working towards a universal single-payer healthcare system. And Medicare is a single-payer program, and it's just targeted towards those over 65.
Now, what about its financial health? We've heard a lot of conservative politicians over the years rail against the projected cost overruns and financial doom and gloom that that projection showed would be a problem for Medicare. Maybe you could set us straight about the current fiscal health of the Medicare program.
Yes, I mean, I think there's a lot of scare tactics. One of the challenges around healthcare today, apart from Medicare and Medicaid programs, is that there's a rising cost across the board. And that is largely driven from a lot of the waste and inefficiencies inherent in our healthcare system, because we have this fragmented patchwork of programs and models that all work disjointed way, and we have a lot of perverse incentives. So Medicare is victim and very much to these ongoing trends. It's not necessarily causing them. In fact, if we were to look at some of the efficiencies that Medicare brings, we can think about how we could both preserve the traditional Medicare, which is the publicly financed version of it, and then expand it to everyone. You would also expand the number of participants who pay into this program, and it would actually create a much more sane system and a universal healthcare system that puts America on par with the rest of the world. But a lot of this fear around its solvency that we're seeing is in many ways a distraction from more ideological tacks towards a very important program for many seniors and particularly many poor seniors as well.
Vijay, I wondered if you respond to the recent statement made by Republican presidential candidate Jeb Bush when he said a week or so ago that Medicare should be phased out and privatized, giving senior citizens vouchers to buy health insurance in the private marketplace. What would actually occur if something like that were implemented?
I mean, these are ongoing kind of attacks against Medicare. One of the problems we're seeing is this ongoing privatization threats of Medicare, which is actually increasing some of the inefficiencies inherent in the program because of privatization campaigns, actually. you know, when we're looking at some of the recent mergers, you can sort of see there's a lot of taxpayer dollars that are actually going to our profiteering for-profit health plan systems that largely run many of our programs in Medicare. And that those incentives are actually what's driving the waste and inefficiencies and problems of our healthcare system, not necessarily the program itself. For example, you know, the Anthem-Cigna merger that is being talked about a bunch last week, we're seeing these mergers result from the solidification of the Affordable Care Act and the preservation of the for-profit healthcare model within that. But, you know, the CEO makes, you know, of Anthem makes $13.5 million last year. He's only going to see a better compensation package this year because their company is doing well. And all this is to say that these companies don't provide care. And then to make matters worse, we're seeing them actually taking our tax dollars and making our system even more complex. And ultimately, the problem with this is that out-of-pocket costs rise. So for Medicare itself, there's a growing fear that with increased privatization, which former Governor Bush is saying we have to phase in, those are actually going to really penalize working to middle class seniors who are going to see their prescription drug costs spike, and many of their copays also take a hit. And so a lot of the kind of threats we're seeing are far more ideological, and they also lend itself to this growing concern around how entrenched our for-profit healthcare system is and how much of a distraction it is in order for us to actually bring a both moral as well as cost-effective program that covers everybody, in which that we wouldn't have these kind of anomalies in place. We wouldn't be the largest per capita spender of healthcare with subpar outcomes in the entire developed world. We wouldn't have such unseemly kind of profit motives inherent within our healthcare system. And so these issues you bring up, particularly around these debates on Medicare, which happen every presidential and congressional election cycle, they speak to a greater challenge in which America needs to start thinking more seriously about catching up with the rest of the world.
Right, and I want to get to Medicare for All in a moment, but I wanted to reintroduce you. We're speaking with Vijay Das, healthcare policy advocate with Public Citizens Congress Watch. We're talking about Medicare on its 50th anniversary just last week, and the future of Medicare, which we'll get to in a little bit, in terms of a lot of people around this country would like to see Medicare expanded to the entire population. Vijay, there's a thriving business selling supplemental Medicare insurance policies. We see ads on TV for them all the time. And I guess in the minds of some policyholders, it's necessary to get this supplemental insurance, especially if you're on a fixed income, to reduce the amount of money flowing out of pocket for certain healthcare procedures and ongoing care. You want to comment on the supplemental market there?
I mean, this speaks to the growing growing emergence of the for-profit models and health plans, largely taking taxpayer dollars and using them to sort of pad the pockets of the health plan industry. One of the challenges people sort of think about it, we need to start thinking about when it comes to the growing growing presence of these health plans is, what do they actually do? I mean, many of them don't provide care. They are middlemen in every sense of the word. They, because of the kind of sapping of one payer, which is a single payer kind of strength in terms of controlling costs, because of this immense amount of of plans and the weakening of Medicare as a result, you're seeing a lot of these bargaining between local hospitals and contracts, and you're seeing how we negotiate the prices for drugs. You're seeing the result of that with pure profiteering because there's more leverage when the bargaining power is weakened from the buyer side, or what we would say is like the health plan or a government kind of payer who pays for the healthcare services we consume. But going back to the essential problem here is when the health plans take more of a slice, and they're not actually doing anything that actually provides care, people are thinking that they're providing some valuable service when, in every sense of the word, by design, their model is meant to skimp. Their model is meant to bypass care. And what they deem as innovation, I would argue, is a way of making our tax dollars work to benefit their marketing campaigns to sell their products and sort of fatten the back pockets of a lot of their executives, which is just unseemly. No other country around the world handles health in developed world and it handles healthcare this way, and it's something the Affordable Care Act did not address. It doubled down while it extended a lot of protections for a lot of people, which is a good thing. It doubled down in this kind of for-profit model, which most economists just see as just broken kind of nonsensical way of providing healthcare, because healthcare is not like every typical commodity, and you know everyone uses whether from the day they are born onto this earth, they will use the healthcare system. And as Senator Sanders said, over time, many see it as a human right. And so when you inject profit motives and you're trying to strip the kind of public financing and public provisions found in Medicare, you only make matters worse.
VJ, I wanted to ask you about, you just brought up the situation with Obamacare, and that is, by estimates I've read, Obamacare will not cover up to 30 million people in this country, even as it's fully implemented. Recognizing that fact, maybe you can tell us why you think Medicare for All, expanding the Medicare program that celebrated its 50th anniversary last week, why expanding Medicare to the entire population is the best way forward to follow the road that maybe Obamacare opened up to eventually get the entire population with insurance like every other industrialized nation in the world?
Yes, I mean, you're right to say that the Affordable Care Act shows us the benefits of more people getting insurance, and we're seeing some statistics where financial distress has lessened as a result of that. But let's be mindful of the fact that the for-profit model is very much alive and well, and the kind of health plan mergers we're seeing, as well as the Wall Street gains, are a reflection that they're doing quite well. But to get back to your point about why a Medicare for All single-payer universal health care program is important in terms of pure coverage, is there's still going to be people left out. Like you were saying, 30 million, even if we're going to expand Medicaid, with this being held up for silly political reasons, we would still have 24 million uninsured. We're going to still leave out undocumented. And we're also, in particular, going to see the rise of underinsurance because of the profit motive incentivizing that. And there are a couple examples where last year the New York Times talked about this Pain Till It Hurts series that talks about the rise of this. But ultimately, that's important because, you know, one in four Americans will this year alone not visit a doctor because of costs. You know, 19% of 19% of the population, didn't fill prescriptions for financial reasons. So the costs are being passed down for silly reasons, and it makes no sense because we spend the most per capita in the entire world on health care. It's an insane amount of money. Most importantly, the for-profit model breeds waste. I think the best example of this, you can just see about, with the kind of ridiculous pricing and with a lack of a single-payer program, we have stupid decisions, right, being made that are hurting people. For example, with hepatitis C drug, there was actually a blockbuster drug made by a pharmaceutical company, Gilead, Merck, Sovaldi. These are blockbuster drugs that are going to help a lot of sick people with hepatitis C. And the price, of course, is $1,000 a pill, $84,000 a treatment. But guess how much it costs to make it? $200. We're seeing pure profiteering because the buying power of the health plans, because there's so many of them and they're all working independently, and we don't have like one system to bargain on behalf of people and the taxpayer, you're seeing this kind of skyrocketing astronomical costs that are going to go straight to the back pockets of the patent, the monopoly protected pharmaceutical industry in this country. And that wouldn't happen under single payer system. We would have Medicare expanded, be able to negotiate drug prices on behalf of people, and you wouldn't have these kind of ridiculous rates that are going to ultimately be passed down to really sick and poor people. And so that's just an example of how wasteful our system is that really separates us from the rest of the developed world, and many of them will just laugh at us, and because it's going to sap our economy. You know, the Affordable Care Act does a lot of things to expand Medicaid and ensure better protection, and those are good things. But when you double down on this broken model, you are inheriting a problem that we can't keep on kicking down the road, which will ultimately hurt the American economy because people's paychecks are going to be depleted as premiums rise and these health plans are further entrenched, whether it be in Medicare, Medicaid, or in the general employer-based and the ACA marketplace system.
Vijay, there are bills in the House and Senate currently that would expand Medicare to all U.S. citizens, creating a universal health care system like most every other industrialized nation in the world. The Senate bill sponsored by independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. John Conyers and Jim McDermott are sponsoring legislation that would expand Medicare for all in the House of Representatives. From what I understand, there's not really a chance that this is going to pass, and certainly we don't hear a lot of vocal support from President Obama either. But what is the important effort here? How important is this effort to at least bring this type of legislation up for public debate?
You know, I read a poll today that said that Deloitte said that 30% of those on the ACA plans are satisfied. That leaves a whole chunk of people that aren't satisfied of their plans because of largely out-of-pocket. Hillary Clinton brought up, and maybe we should be thinking about how they're going to handle this issue, right, in some legislative fix. Guess what? We have a solution right in front of us, and we are just ignoring it because of the seemingly large role of money in politics that governed the last health reform debate, right? So, I mean, it's really important that folks realize that there are solutions and that we have representatives in Congress. You have a lot of smart thought leaders who see the light, who are writing about this, who are chronicling challenges of what we're dealing with and are offering a way forward. And I think acknowledging those merits of their ideas is really important because they're sound. And I think ultimately that's going to win out over time. It's going to take some time. And it's also going to take some reforms that we have to get money out of politics because it's really destroying this most important debate that everyone should be focusing on because it impacts all of us. So that is one avenue I wanted to bring up. The second one is there are actually states that could offer the way forward. A TRE, who's a Washington Post reporter, is actually campaigning throughout the state of Oregon and he's also helping lead a campaign in Colorado. And he wrote this great book about a comparative study of America, and he did a PBS special on basically how broken our model is because we don't have a universal healthcare system, and this was during the healthcare debate. And he's campaigning, talking about the kind of single-payer legislation that's being offered in Oregon, and he's campaigning in Colorado, talking about a single-payer path forward there. States are oftentimes the kind of laboratories of democracy, of course, as we've heard many times. And I think that holds true for this as well, just as the ACA in Massachusetts version was a model there. So there are movements, and there's a strong grassroots movement that will only be strengthened over time as people say enough is enough.
Right. I helped sponsor a public forum in New York City just a couple of months ago with organizers and activists in Vermont who are pushing a single-payer system in that state. It hit a snag with the governor there, basically rejecting a finance plan. And now grassroots activists have taken that over and trying to come up with a way to fairly impose the taxation that would support a universal health care system in Vermont, a very small state. And I think we remember that the universal health care system, the single-payer system in Canada, was born out of one province there, Saskatchewan, experimenting with it, worked very well, and then it was adopted by the Canadian federal government some years later. So where do you think we're headed? More likely to see experimentation on the state level before the United States as a whole moves to a federal single-payer system?
I think as it stands right now, given the sort of toxicity coming out of Washington, I think it's a fair assessment to say the states are where you're going to see some movement. That being said, I think it's worthwhile to still pressure. I talk to members of Congress all the time. Many of them just don't understand. And what it says to me is that people are just not educated about healthcare in the context of what we know. And we've inherited this broken model, and that doesn't mean it has to be with us as, $400 billion of waste occur because of the healthcare system, because of this inefficient way of going about providing healthcare every year. Medicare, of course, is way more efficient when it comes to administrative costs. It's 2% versus 17% of the private health plans. I have to educate members of Congress and their staff, and then they just sit and they're just like, oh, I get it. So the reason people get so confused is we have the most complicated healthcare system in the entire world, and that's partly because we're preserving a silly, dumb model, and we don't have to just accept the status quo. So it has huge implications, and I think you will see a lot more developments in the state, but that's probably more in the kind of state we're in terms of politics right now. The important thing is to just keep on going. New York, by the way, you should know, just their state assembly led by Dick Gottfried in New York State Assembly just passed, and I testified there last December on behalf of their single-payer bill, and that passed their assembly overwhelmingly so, and now it's in the Senate, their single-payer bill. So the point being is that there is interest, there is a kind of passion, there is kind of big-time activists and thought leaders that are behind this case, and we're going to probably see slowly but surely the rollout of this program, just because America can't afford anything else, and then people are just going to be sick and tired of getting nickel and dimed.
Well, Vijay, just a final quick question. We only have about a minute left, but what do we know about public opinion when it comes to expanding Medicare or instituting a single-payer universal health care system for the entire country. Is public support out there for such a program?
But Hugh, in actually January, said a majority of Democrats actually support a single-payer program. And I think there hasn't really been an effective poll that would ask this very question. I think the questions have largely been taken up by thinking around the Affordable Care Act because of all the debates in Washington occurring. But I think if you actually educated folks, remove the scare tactics around socialized medicine. This is far from it. You know, we're still going to preserve private providers, doctors, the insurance. The insurance companies would be reduced substantially, but the hospital groups will stay private. The pharmaceutical companies are going to stay private. I mean, there's a lot of this unnecessary scare tactics. If you educate everyday Americans about these issues, I'm sure they're going to see the light. And I talk to conservatives, a lot about this, and they see it as hugely important, particularly as small businesses are struggling to deal with rising healthcare premiums, and that's only increasing. So a unifying issue, and I think if you just talk to people, you'll get somewhere.
All right, Vijay, thank you for spending time with us tonight talking about expanding Medicare for all in the country, single-payer health care system that would address the health care crisis that continues despite the institution of Obamacare. Vijay, what's the website people can get more information about some of the research and articles that you've worked on?
Yeah, I think citizen.org is a website of Public Citizen, and you can find me on Twitter at Vijdas, V-I-J-D-A-S, and I just released an article with Adam Gaffney talking about healthcare access issues for minorities, and it's a relationship to how a single-payer Medicare for All program can address that issue with CNN, and I've also done a lot of advocacy with other groups around this issue as well that you can find on our website.
All right. Well, again, thanks for spending time with us, and best of luck with the important work you're doing there on single payer and expanding Medicare. Appreciate it. Thanks, Vijay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Vijay Das, healthcare policy advocate with Public Citizens Congress Watch.